This is Maria Marcusano, head women's basketball coach at Purdue Fort Wayne, and you're listening to The Sports Rush with Brett Rump on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
We're going to give this another shot. Hopefully everything works fine this time. We had a lot of behind-the-scenes technical issues going on that we just had to address during our commercial break, and I think we've got everything sorted out. Broadcasting live at Parkview Field today, it is the Tin Caps home opener. They'll be taking on the Lake County Captains here at Parkview Field, starting with the first pitch about 6:35. And, of course, plenty of tickets still available for you to come out and enjoy this great weather. The wind is blowing out.
Hey.
Yeah, it's like midsummer weather conditions. Maybe not quite as warm as we would hope for midsummer, but, you know, when you get those southwesterly winds and a few gusts, you get a ball in the air and anything can happen. And
yeah,
a lot of people like to see the home run ball. You know, it's the pitcher's nightmare.
Oh, yeah, they don't like the wind blowing out at all.
As a former pitcher. Now, actually, I'll be honest with you, Adam, because I was a off-speed pitcher, I did not mind the wind.
Oh.
Because, you know, what's it going to be when you've got a 70-mile-per-hour fastball and the wind knocks it down by 10% or 5%? It's
right.
Not going to be that much. No, actually, what I liked was, because I was a breaking ball pitcher, when you snap off that spin, if you throw it into the wind, it really bites and it really drops. And so I actually kind of didn't mind throwing into a wind that was blowing out. And as a breaking ball pitcher, I was trying to keep the ball down anyway and get a lot of ground balls, get guys to top it or pop it up. And so it didn't bother me all that much. Now, when you're a power pitcher and you like to work high in the zone, sometimes that's going to be a little bit different. But that wasn't my game, so I don't mind it. But get on out here and get some tickets. Coming up on the show, plenty of Tin Caps guests will be joining us. John Nolan's going to be rolling by here in just a few. But we were talking about last night's game, the Boilermakers in UConn. And what I wanted to say, basically, is UConn went with a very interesting game plan. Last year, what we saw with Fairleigh Dickinson when they beat Purdue was Fairleigh Dickinson packed the paint, three or four guys. They felt like Purdue's three-point shooting was no threat. They had to contain Zach Edey. UConn comes in with the exact opposite approach, mm-hmm. in the fact that we want to take away all of the three-point shooters. We're going to man-to-man, one-on-one, Zach Edey down low. And if he scores 35, 40 points but has to take 30 to 35 shots to do it, we're fine with that. And so that was their approach last night. They locked down on the three-point line. Purdue ended up just 1 of 7 in the game from behind the arc. Tough night for Fletcher Lawyer. Of course, that's the strength of his game, is the three-point shooting. He was never able to get freed up. And a lot of times when Purdue is really clicking offensively, and I think the defense got them a little out of sync, because when they're really clicking, they're doing things like setting stagger screens on the perimeter to get guys off a stagger and be able to pop out, get a quick catch and shoot for three balls. And they weren't able to do that. And then when they were able to get the pass on some type of a perimeter screen, the defense closed out so aggressively that the temptation for the Boilermakers was to drive to the basket. I thought Jay Wright had a great point in halftime when he said Purdue has to resist that temptation because that's not their game and it's what UConn wants them to do. Tack the basket and go right into clinging down there protecting the rim. And with the bigger bodies and the athletic length that UConn presented, Fletcher Lawyer got sucked in four times, drove to the basket. That is not his game. It's not where he's going to cash in his NIL funding. And it just 0 for 5 night, 0 for 1 from distance, no points last night for the Homestead product. And that hurts. I mean, you know, you need that balance inside, outside. And then I also felt like Friday night's game or Saturday's game took its toll on Zach Edey. I thought there was a good stretch there in the second half where he was winded. He didn't have the legs, didn't have the bounce. Seemed like he was always a step slow. A couple of shots that I think he normally would have had a chance to block. He just didn't quite get there in time and get the proper position. There were a couple of shots he took where I thought he was being overpowered. And it's tough to overpower a guy who's 7 feet, 4 inches tall and 300 pounds. But I just felt like he was getting pushed off his spot. And a lot of that, I thought, was because he was feeling the fatigue. And you do get the extra long breaks and during TV timeouts and all of that. Matt Painter rolled the dice. He didn't want to use his bench. He didn't want to take a chance having Zach Edey off the floor, and so he made him play through it. And I thought Zach Edey showed a little bit of a second wind there late, but it was too little too late by that point, as Connecticut had already built a 15, 16, 17-point lead before Zach Edey kind of came to life and hit some late buckets. He racked up 37 points, and that was one of the quietest 37 that I think I've seen, because he really had to work for it. It wasn't like he was dominating the defense. Everything he got, he had to work hard for. And because of that, I think that also played into the fatigue. He was really having to, number one, guard guys a little bit on the perimeter. They were trying to step him outside. They were taking him to the basket. So I thought he had more motion and movement than he probably normally does at the defensive end. And then offensively, having a guy like Klingon who could challenge him near the basket. I also thought that Purdue didn't do a great job. Now, they did do better late in the game, and you saw it, where Edey got in a better position. And Coach Kaufman at Purdue Fort Wayne likes to call it doing the early work, which is when the bigs are trying to establish their position in the post. That first spot you get is often the most important one. You want to do the early work. When you come down the court, you want to establish yourself down on the low block and not one step outside the block, because the more space you give up before you establish that initial position, the easier you're going to be to guard. And we saw Edey make some very deep catches there late in the game. But again, by the point that point, the game was over. And you got to give a lot of credit to UConn.
Oh, absolutely,
I don't think Purdue lost it as much as UConn won it, because UConn just had depth. They have multiple players that are going to hurt you. Mm-hmm. Last night, Newton, just a crazy game. You know, and all the talk about Klingon and the matchup at the low block and the two big men going at it. And I really felt it was the guard play that made the difference last night.
I have to agree with the guard play being the difference. And I just felt like UConn's guards had that size advantage, too, over Purdue's guards. And it felt like every time they were on the offensive end, they were just kind of able to get space and get a shot up over some of the Purdue defenders. It felt like almost every drive they had the ability to hit some little floater over their defender or get to the basket just with size and strength, it felt like.
Of course, you're hearing the wind. It is gusting. It is blowing out. And since we're in kind of a wind tunnel here, right at the main gate, it's kind of briskly passing through us. And you can hear it probably in the background. But last night, Braden Smith came out, looked really good early. But again, I think the pressure of that UConn defense, where they didn't mind. If you wanted to put it on the deck and try to get past them, they were fine with that.
Sure.
They just were not going to give you a look to set up and shoot a three.
Nope.
And so I thought Braden Smith showed some wear in that second half. I mean, Purdue just did not play a lot of depth. And unfortunately, last night, other than the one remarkable play by Cam Heidi when he went, I mean, elbows above the rim when he went up and scooped it in his right palm and fired it down on a rebound putback. Other than that play, I don't think Purdue's bench gave them much of anything. Caleb first got in there at one play, and he gave up a three-point play to Klingon.
Yep.
You had Miles Colvin, who missed a couple of shots and just looked like a freshman that was maybe a deer in headlights a little bit, just didn't go at it confidently, and Matt Painter had to replace him. So in some ways, I think Matt Painter had no choice but to ride guys that he probably realized didn't have a lot left in the tank. The only thing he could have done was maybe before it got to 16, 17 points, because it wasn't like it was a quick 8-point burst that took it from 7 to 15.
No.
It actually was, the game was like a 9-point game, and then it was 10. Then it was 11, then it was 12. And it just slowly kept growing, slowly. I mean, it was, oh my gosh, it's like cutting yourself shaving and then bleeding out. You know, it was just awful.
Death by a thousand paper cuts.
Yeah, it absolutely was. And so congratulations to UConn, back-to-back champions. For Purdue, they fall just short, but still a remarkable season. They make some history. They get to the Final Four for the first time since 1980, 44 years ago. And And now they have to learn what life after Zach Edey is going to be like. And I don't know where that takes them.
I'll tell you what, I think it's Will Berg season now at Purdue West Lafayette. Look out for Will Berg next season at the big man spot.
I have no idea. At least when Zach Edey took over the role,
yeah,
we had seen him, you
right,
know, 10,
right.
12 minutes. Zach Edey, though, got in such tremendous shape that no longer did we see Caleb Hurst. We never saw Will Berg.
No.
So I really don't know if Will Berg is going to be the guy. My guess, and this is just a guess right now, like if Purdue started their next season tomorrow, I would guess Trey Kaufman-Wren may play the five.
The center?
Yeah. And Heidi would play the four and then figure it out from there. I know you're going to have Smith and Lawyer
right.
at guard, so
Absolutely.
You only got one other spot to fill, and chances are it's Miles Colvin, although last night what Miles Colvin did didn't necessarily give me a lot of confidence in Colvin.
No.
We've got to hopefully talk to John Nolan here real soon.
I think he'll be headed over here.
We're trying to snag John, get his thoughts on what he saw from the team over the weekend, and of course, maybe at some point he'll actually tell the truth on how long he's been here, because I've heard the question asked of him like four times, and yet I'm not real sure that he's given the answer. I think it's 10 or 11 years.
Like he said, he stopped counting after he got past one hand, so, or two hands, you know.
Yeah, well, he might be at two hands, although he stopped counting at one hand, he might be at two.
Hey, if you can count more than one hand, credit to you.
But anyway, we'll talk to John. Also coming up, we're going to have a quick talk with Jack Gordon, who is the radio booth. Every year we get someone that comes in and picks up in the radio booth, does a little TV perhaps, does some road games. Jack Gordon out of Syracuse. Imagine that. We found a guy in Syracuse. It's a really difficult place to find broadcasters, that Syracuse. You know, Newhouse, they're great. They're a great law school, but they aren't much for broadcasters.
Come on now.
I know. It's actually been a great pipeline here for Fort Wayne. And a lot of the former broadcasters, I've got some really good gigs right now. But Jack Gordon, another one of the talented broadcasters to come through town over the summer, and we'll get a chance to talk to him. TinCast President Mike Nutter will be joining us. Also, hour number two, the Wizard of Moz. Not a Syracuse grad. I will come out and just tell you that he is not a Syracuse grad. But Mike Moz joins us coming up around 5:15. And then we'll have Brian Chackow, who will join us near the bottom of the 5 o'clock hour.
Sounds good.
46862, the Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. If you'd like to come out and join us, we would love to see you here at the ballpark. And I believe the doors, what time do the gates open? Are those going to be 5:30? 5:35,
right.
So an hour before the first pitch, 5:35, the gates will open, and you'll be able to get your tickets right here at Parkview Field. I think they're in the neighborhood of maybe 3,700 tickets are in that ballpark, so there's still plenty of seats available. Bring the family on out. You got gorgeous weather. You got some overcast skies, but it's supposed to stay dry until later tonight, so
yeah.
Should be good. Come on out and enjoy opening day at the ballpark. Tin Caps versus the Great Lakes Loons. All right, we got to take a break, and we'll do that when we come back. Hopefully, we'll sneak in a moment or two with John Nolan. It's all part of the Sports Rush broadcasting live from Parkview Field for the home opener on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. The home opener here at Parkview Field, and it is nice weather. I won't say perfect weather. There's a bit of a breeze. Some clouds have rolled in, but no rain expected. Temperature sitting around 70 degrees. Can't complain. And someone who's been here to experience a handful plus of home openers is joining us now. It is John Nolan who jumps in with us here on the Sports Rush, and welcome to the 2024 season.
Yeah, thank you very much, Brett. So my first opening day here was 2013, so I was, you know, part-time seasonal for a couple of seasons. Along the way, there was a lost year in 2020 because of the pandemic, so, you know, again, it's too many numbers for me to count, but, you know, roughly a decade or so now.
Now, everybody hears you doing the broadcast, whether it's basketball, whether it's Tin Caps baseball, which, of course, you've probably done more games of Tin Caps baseball than
anyone besides Mike Moz, I guess.
Is it? Is that where you're at now?
Probably close. I know Mike's got the running count for himself. I don't.
You've had plenty of dates, but what I think is fascinating is what most people don't know is what goes on behind the scenes. I know you were basically starting your home opener day before the sun came up this morning.
Yeah, well, of course, you know, it's great here in Fort Wayne to have, for instance, Caleb and Kenny, the morning show out here at the ballpark. We had Wayne 15. We had 21 Alive out here early this morning as well. So we appreciate that coverage. And, yeah, it is sometimes kind of around the clock here once you're in season.
Of course, you also prepare with the rosters. We talked to you a little bit about that and preparing to handle all of the visiting media and everything that goes into that. What is the daily job like for you?
It does somewhat change day to day. I mean, I guess I've used this analogy with some people in minor league baseball, and I think it even applies a bit in major league baseball. Opening day is kind of like the Super Bowl. I mean, in football, it's like all building up to the championship game. Here we wind up getting arguably the most coverage that we will of any day all year, maybe with the exception of the 4th of July here right off the bat. And, classic line here. We don't have a spring training, so we just dive right into it. But, again, it's a lot of fun. And, yeah, glad, I kind of live for this adrenaline in season here.
You had a chance to spend the weekend with new broadcaster Jack Gordon, who's only been here, less than 2 weeks. So another Syracuse guy. Explain the process of finding that position each year.
Oh, boy. Well, yeah. And, I stumbled into it originally following Mike Cousins, who these days is with ESPN, Cubs Dodgers game on ESPN Radio on Saturday, for example. And he made a mistake in recruiting me out. And I fooled enough people those first couple years to last a little bit longer. And now I guess I would say it's kind of the example of those who can't do teach, and or those you can't play, you scout. So I guess we've been able to identify some pretty good talent here over the years, and not just from Syracuse. Last year, Derek Decker out of IU was tremendous. Mike Monaco, a Notre Dame alum, is on the big time basically with ESPN. But pretty cool. Even a couple years ago, we had Ben Shulman, who was part of that Orange Mafia. He is now the radio voice of the Toronto Blue Jays back in his hometown of Toronto. So excited to have Jack with us here, kind of the next prospect in the line.
I know. I'll be joining you upstairs. Tin Caps, one of the rare minor league franchises that not only gets the opportunity to have all of their games on radio, but also all games streaming at MILB TV, but also select broadcasts that are carried locally.
Yeah, so tonight will be on my TV. That's 21.3, or if you have Xfinity, it's 1172. So special broadcast tonight for opening day. We'll be back on there Thursday, and then for Thursdays throughout the season, and maybe even some other bonus games. But yeah, really appreciate our ownership group, Hardball Capital, and then here at the top with Mike Nutter, our team president, Michael Limmer, our vice president for marketing, and their commitment. Of course, the same can be said across the way for the Comets and the job that Shane does now after Bob Chase had the legendary status. So, hopefully our local fans appreciate the effort that minor league teams here in the Summit City are making, which isn't the norm everywhere.
John, always appreciate a chance to visit. I'll see you up in the booth a little bit later on.
Yeah, thanks so much to you and Adam for being out here. And, look forward to everyone getting to hear from Jack and others here over the course of the show.
Yep, that is John Nolan, Tin Caps broadcaster, head of media services here with the Tin Caps. And now we want to bring in Jack Gordon. He is a new voice that you're going to be hearing on Tin Caps broadcast. In fact, maybe you already have heard him, because this weekend he was with John on the trip up to Midland, Michigan. And, you're officially ordained now as a Tin Caps broadcaster.
I am.
Your first experience over the weekend, what was it like?
Oh, it was great. I mean, going on the road with the team, waking up, prepping, and then actually watching it happen and getting to call some innings with John, dream come true right there. I mean, it's professional baseball, getting to read about all of these guys and tell their stories on the radio. There's nothing like that. It's just something that I tell myself before every game, that be grateful and thankful for what you get to do, because it's a very special thing.
Well, and you're one of many that's come through Syracuse. So, it's like you're You got to make a name for yourself, I guess,
right,
when you come in
right
here, because there's so many in the pipeline, and sometimes we just kind of joke about that. It's
yeah
another Syracuse guy. But this year it's Jack Gordon. Tell us a little bit about you and how you got involved in broadcasting.
Well, born and raised in Syracuse, New York. So to further the, you know, going to Syracuse pipeline, I'm actually from there too. So lived there my whole life. I have always been a massive baseball fan. Baseball was my first love. I remember being only a few years old watching games, and the first person that I recognized as a broadcaster that I wanted to be like was Bob Costas doing, you know, some MLB Network games. And, you know, the way that he would call a game, the stories he would tell so eloquently, I just enjoyed it so much that, one, it made me love baseball a lot more, and two, once I realized that these guys actually got to just go to games for free and actually get paid to be at the games, then I was like, you know what, that's what I want to do. So since then, I've just been watching baseball, listening to baseball, and then once I started broadcasting in the summer leagues near my hometown, I started in Utica, New York, which is about 45 minutes from Syracuse. And then last year I was broadcasting in the Cape Cod Baseball League, which a good portion of players at this level played in the Cape League. There's some tremendous talent
tremendous
there.
League in Cape Cod.
And it was definitely a great start to, or great continuance of my broadcasting. So it's kind of easy when you go to Syracuse to get into it and to end up being around it all the time. And then it's the next thing to have to grind and wake up every morning saying, you know, I want to be great. I want to follow in the footsteps of the people that came before me here. You know, like John mentioned, the like people like Ben Shulman and Mike Cousins and Jack McMullen, Michael Tricarico, Evan Stockton, the list goes on. I think about those people every day saying, you know what, I want to be just like that. I want to be even greater.
Well, it's funny because the perception has always been historically that you get into radio because somebody along the way told you you had a voice for radio. But that's not necessarily the case anymore. You know, that
right.
There's not a, it used to be a very defined voice. You know, you had to have that big, bassy voice. Now it's very conversational with radio. And I'm wondering about the medium because, you know, I always feel like there's nothing more intimate than a radio broadcaster talking to the fans of that team. That's a certain level of sports intimacy that you don't get in other sports. Have you been drawn in your broadcasting career, radio, TV? Everybody wants to ask, you know, which way are you heading? But what's your history been like?
So I have done mostly radio, and when you get to Syracuse, you learn radio first, and that's where you build your skills, and then from there branch out to TV typically. So I was a part of both of our student radio stations at Syracuse, WAER being the one that broadcasts football, men's basketball, men's lacrosse, and has been doing so for 76 years. So that's where you go to learn and hone your skills, and that's where I started to love radio. And like you mentioned, that interaction with the listener you have, you know, the first lesson I learned was consider the listener. You're calling the game for them, for the fans, right? So I always think about establishing that relationship. What do they want to hear? What's important to them? What questions do they have? So that plus just the ability to paint the picture on the radio and describe things the way that you can and the way that people want to hear, that draws me towards radio. It just feels kind of like an art. I've done some TV also, and I love TV. It's a different variety. You're calling a game differently. But baseball on the radio, there's nothing like it.
I want to go back and talk a little bit about your experience at Syracuse, because when you have so many talented broadcasters that all know that Newhouse is the place to be if you're looking for a broadcasting
right
future in the sports landscape, it's obviously competitive, and there's only so many spots to get your foot in the door. What was that experience like, kind of trying to get your name into the position that you wanted to be in?
It's very challenging. It requires a lot of work ethic, and it took me a little while to learn that. You know, a lot of people go to Newhouse and say, I'm going to call Syracuse football or basketball, and sometimes it doesn't actually happen because, like you said, that's what everybody wants to do, right? So it requires you to to push further than that next person, to always think there's someone chasing right behind me that I got to put in that extra 15-20% so I can make sure I can call those games. So for, you know, a couple of years, I wasn't calling games, I wasn't on the radio, and then I eventually paid my dues and started to work my butt off even more. Junior year, got into it a lot, and then this past year I've gotten to do, you know, a lot of tremendous things that I'm so grateful for. So it ends up being about the work ethic, along with the fact that, you know, nobody wants to work with bad people. So you're not going to get those opportunities if you're a jerk. You have to treat people well. So the work ethic and just being a kind person are kind of how you put yourself in a position to succeed and put yourself in a position to have fun while you do it.
I want to ask you, while we've got a minute, we're going to be talking to TinCast President Mike Nutter here in just a minute.
He's an important guy.
He's an important guy, and I'm sorry, Jack, you're going to get bumped for Mike Nutter when he comes around.
As I should.
But when you're at Syracuse and, you know, you have all that competition, there's a talented group of people that are going to be coming out of Syracuse with you. And it seems like some of the top names in broadcasting right now, we just saw one last night, Ian Eagle,
oh
calling the NCAA
tremendous
championship game. But I guess I'm trying to think the best way to word this is, what is it that's special about Syracuse in bringing out, is it just good broadcasters go there because that's where they know they need to go, and then therefore good broadcasters come out of there? Is there a certain thing that you learned about the Newhouse School of Broadcasting that stuck with you?
Yeah.
What is it?
So the first part, you know, going as a good broadcaster, I don't think so, because when I got to college, I wasn't a broadcaster, really. I knew I wanted to do that, but I hadn't done much, didn't have any refined skills, really. So what separates Syracuse is that the expectation is so high. You know, at our student radio station that both John and I were a part of, WAER, we have meetings every single Sunday where we sit down and we go over our past broadcasts and we say, all right, what worked, what didn't work? Okay, what didn't work? Well, let's hammer that. Let's make sure we fix that. That's a weekly thing. And inside that place where we have those meetings, there's a wall of fame, the WAER wall of fame. And I sat on the side of the room every single week where I would stare at the faces of Ian Eagle, Sean McDonough, Mike Tirico.
I was going to say, the Broadcasting Hall of Fame has those same pictures.
Yes. So I would see that every week, and I'd say, man, we got a lot to live up to here. We got to have high expectations, and we have to work hard. So I'd say that's one of the main things that separates Syracuse, is that you have a group of very motivated people in there that didn't necessarily go in as these star broadcasters, but they went in and they said, I got to work my tail off to get an opportunity here. And throughout that process, you know, you're going to learn the important skills to do so.
Of those guys, any one of them that came back to school gave you some advice?
Ooh, so actually, you know, a few of them have. Recently, last year, Sean McDonough did. He is hilarious. He's an incredible guy. And then this past year, most recently, Mike Tirico did.
Wow.
And that guy holds court. When he talks, everybody in the room walks over and they go, oh my, holy cow, that's Mike Tirico. So when he talks, people listen. And, you know, we learn a lot from people like that. And one of the other things about Syracuse is that when you go and you go through the process, you pass it down. You know, the people younger than you, you listen to their tapes, you give them feedback, and you give them advice. That's how it keeps on going. So, you know, people like Mike and Sean and Ian continue to do that, and that's what helps a lot of us out.
Well, I think so far, just three games in, we're blessed to have you here in Fort Wayne. Enjoy the summer.
Thank you so much, Brett. I love it here already. Everybody's so nice, and there's so many cool things here, and nothing better than Parkview Field, right?
It's just like the players, just working his way up through the broadcasting ranks. That is Jack Gordon. Appreciate it, Jack.
Thanks, Brett.
And you know what it means? That means we've got to talk to Mike Nutter, because TinCast President Mike Nutter is right here. And we're not going to go to break or anything. We're actually going to just bring Mike right in and get a chance to talk to him. As now, I think if I did the math correctly, that I just did very loose math, but we're somewhere in the neighborhood of, I think, what, 25 opening days combined, 24, 25 for you?
In Fort Wayne?
Yeah.
Yeah. 33 overall, but I moved here in October of 99, so the 2000 season, this would be 24 And the opening days. And then the one, plus one. Where I got more stress than any seasons that did exist.
It's like eligibility
yeah.
at college.
You still yeah, I think I got a COVID
year. You got
year.
The senior year. Yeah, you've still got a senior year. Mike Nutter joining us here on the Sports Rush, Tin Caps president. And I know it's always a busy day. It's an exciting day. But it ends an off-season of anticipation for the day to finally get here.
It's been great. You know, Tim Burkhardt, our facilities manager that's been with us since the beginning, sent an email a little bit ago saying it's the best it's ever looked on opening day, and it certainly does look good. That field looks good. Bryce Ginder, one of the assistant head groundskeepers of the Carroll Ginder family, just showed me a picture 6 months ago today. None of the turf was down yet. It was all grass and it was all dirt and it wasn't even flattened yet. And so to see that picture that I just saw to this, it's cliche, but time sure flies, and it feels like I was just driving back bummed out from Midland, Michigan, losing a 2-1 playoff series where we were right in it in all the games. And then here we are, opening day of season 15 at Parkview Field.
What are the things that keep you up at night as you count down toward the home opener? Is it, you know, I know staffing is always an issue because this is going to be the first experience for yeah. a lot of the employees. Weather, is that
yeah,
a
weather.
Major concern?
Yeah, you know, and I'm not trying to sound like I'm some know-it-all, but you think after we do this for so long, you just, I mean, I readily acknowledge I can't control any of it or anything like that. And last week I did have a tough day because the forecast turned so much for the worst today. And then one of the first texts I got from somebody today was, looks perfect for tonight, but man, the next two or three days look bad. And I literally, he's a friend of mine, I replied back, you're not going to rob my joy. And he said, you've been reading some self-help books, have you? And so, you know, like literally while we were just sitting here, it's very minor. The microphones in the 400 Club don't work because you're firing them up for the first time in a little while and some of that stuff. It's neat that we have enough other things in the venue that it's not like we winterize everything.
Yeah.
But I am envious of our two general managers in Columbia and Chattanooga, South Carolina and Tennessee, because they've had college games. Brad Shank in Columbia Fireflies had 10,000 people a month ago. Clemson versus USC, they rotated
wow.
every year between them and Greenville. So it's always played at a neutral site. And then Chattanooga's been doing Big Ten games for like a month because
they get them to come down and play,
and they're not charging them much, but people come to the games and stuff. And so new field, new entryway. We know both of those are in great shape, but it's a brand new ticket system for tonight. So maybe Michael Limmer's not on edge at all, and it's not like it would be his fault
yeah.
or anything like that, but you hear a rare story of somebody like, yeah, we switched, and nobody could scan in the tickets, like as a throwaway line. And you're like, wait a minute, what was that last trail part? Yeah, we couldn't get anybody in. We just ended up having to rip them, and we'll count them later. And it's like old school. And
yeah.
so such an accomplished staff, people that have been around a long time. There's not a lot of stuff left up to chance. Jim Jarecki, who's my best friend in the game of baseball that doesn't work here, he runs the West Michigan Whitecaps, and he texted me with 20 minutes ago, you know what they say, brother, if it's not done now, we're not worried about it. You know, so it's just kind of like you've got the time, but the weather here can wreak havoc, like for prep and stuff. But we saw you Saturday. It was nice and dry Saturday, and yesterday was perfect for the Eclipse people, but also for the ballpark people trying to get ready.
You know, I think one thing the fans probably have become aware of is that your role in charge of this ball club doesn't involve anybody that you see playing the game.
And I appreciate your help
on
for helping me with that.
So even though it might be a good thing to have 23 players come back from
yeah.
the playoff team from a year
yeah.
ago, well, wasn't you picking
no.
the roster. You,
no.
you didn't.
Although I would have picked a lot of those
yeah,
guys.
I know
so
you
I'd,
would have.
You lined up pretty good this year.
Well, in fact, I'm wondering if you ever let Dunn and Villar and some of those guys even leave during the
yeah.
winter.
That's funny. Really good returning staff. You know, the two big prospects that will get all the attention at first would be Ethan Salas and Dylan Lesko, and then Homer Bush Jr. would be probably third in that thing. But obviously it takes a lot more than that. And the good clubhouse guys like Bender and Villar and Dunn, those are the ones that help. I mean, Ethan Salas hopefully has a 10, 15-year major league career. I mean, people talk him like he bought him like he's a future Hall of Famer. And I don't mean that for pressure. I'm just, that's what people are saying. But to have those mentors that he does in Villar and Bender, it'll pay off big time down the road.
The process of seeing these guys go to the Padres, and what does it mean to you as the head of this organization to see guys that played here last year now playing for the Padres?
My son and I were texting. Carson's a 20-year-old sophomore at IU and played baseball growing up, and he sent a text the other day when Merrill got his fourth hit that day. And, like, for him, it was like a teammate of his. Like, none of us ever try and take credit for it. We're proud of them. And so one of the guys from Lake County came in today, and he was mumbling something under his breath. And I said, hey, man, what's up? You know, like, I could tell he was kind of being silly. He's like, you got all these pictures up of all these guys. Where's my man, Paulie? I said, it hasn't even gotten back from the printer yet. He's been in the big leagues 2 weeks. And we were laughing, and the young man told me that he lived with Paulie spring. So it was really cool getting to, like, friends of friends type of thing. We sent people out to spring training. Brian Shacko, our VP of finance, took his family out there for the first time ever. And you get pretty good access around the Padres stuff, obviously, as you would expect. He's been with us forever. And those people were coming up to him. I mean, the Merrills, the Paulies, Ethan. You know, and it was like, I loved my time there, and to see the two make it on opening day of this year. Merrill got moved from the 9-hole to the 8-hole yesterday and got another hit. I think he's going to keep moving his way up. Camposano has really become a frontline catcher, and so it's neat to see. There's a lot of pride. I want to be clear. We're not trying to take credit for anything. First time in my life, we sometimes talk behind the curtain on this show. I put a handwritten note in every guy's locker down there. There was 31 of them because we had a guy on the developmental list as well. And I just said, happy opening day. Whether you're here for a week or whether you're here for years, you're welcome to town. We love to have you. It's going to be an awesome year, you know. And it let them feel like there is a part of it. And Mike Daly's done an incredible job with that, with the communication. I ask him, I'm like, in spring training, you coaching third with your phone out in case Nolan or I text you? Because he's just been so responsive, which for us is great. And people don't realize sometimes, Lauren, our head athletic trainer, Chandler Craig, the head strength and conditioning coach, and a man of the people, Sam Swirly Lewis, all kidding aside, they do so much for us. Because Mike is an incredibly accomplished baseball guy, but he doesn't. So Lauren, as the head trainer, sets up every bus for the year. Chandler will set up the food with the dietitians at home and on the road. Swirly makes sure they have everything they need, and not just uniforms, but we're out of town and somebody's sick, and that kind of stuff. It's really neat. And that's one of the things that I'm excited about. Mike Daly, with all of his experience, he's really going to get to see some of the behind-the-scenes, right, everyday stuff that I think is cool. And then I'll tell you one other real quick baseball story if we have time.
Yeah.
I was walking out today, and I believe it was Francis Pena, the very, very talented relief pitcher we have, that hit 99 the other day on the gun in Midland. And, you know, anytime you're throwing like twice the temperature, it's a big thing. And or three times the temp. And I'm walking by, and Pena's getting loose like, I mean, it's go time. And then I look over, and Dunn and Robertson, again, a couple of the really good clubhouse dudes and fun guys that keep the morale up and keep the people loose, they're taking the cuts, and I'm looking around, and I walked over to Mike Daly, and I said, hey, what do we got here? And he said, we've decided that instead of, you know, they're still going to do the normal cage work and all that kind of stuff, but it sounded like, if not daily, frequently, they're going to do live on live. So instead of Francis throwing a bullpen,
oh really,
down there, well, I'm thinking at first Dunn's in the box, and I'm thinking he's just getting his timing down. Like a lot of people think,
yeah,
it makes sense.
Stand there
and scan some stuff. Because right behind the mound is Eshelman, the pitching coach, and then the young video guy with the Padres. So there's no screen, there's no net, so I'm thinking, you know, he's just going to get timing down. Well, I mean, if Robertson's in the box, he's swinging. And so Dunn, you know, tracks six or eight balls, whatever it was, and then he walks out. I'm like, this is really good. I think guys tracking and getting their time. About the third pitch, Robertson just cuts it loose. And I looked at Daly, and I said, those two guys are out there. They're fine without a screen. Oh, yeah, they'll be fine. And so it was kind of like cliche, but like good on good. So Pena in some cases was working on certain pitches, so maybe that's why Dunn didn't swing at anything the first trip through, but they probably took three or four at-bats each, and he got his work in, and everybody thanked each other and stuff, because it is a little bit, as cliche as it is, of the iron sharpens iron, of like, he was bringing all he had, and they weren't backing down, because, yeah. I mean, they're trying to get their timing down and everything now, too, is really, really cool.
The whole goal is to barrel up the baseball. They're trying to barrel it up.
And that's the thing they're talking about, Merrill. His barrel percentage is like the highest of all any rookies and like 10th in the big league, like some of this stuff. And it's just all those stats that didn't exist back in the Stone Age when you and I were younger.
I got a question, though, and that was a long time ago. I got a question for you about the high A level, because it was almost a very quiet switch because coming out of COVID and everything. But moving to the high A versus the single A or low A, if fans want to think of it that way. One thing you see with today's ball players, and I don't think it's the change of level. I think it's more just baseball itself has changed and evolved. But you mentioned strength and conditioning. Go back your 20-some years. Isn't it amazing how much bigger and stronger these guys are?
Yes. I mean, you see, I was down there earlier, Rowdy, you know, Ethan Routson, who we all love. I mean, he's probably, you don't have favorites, but like Nolan might tell you that would be his or something like, I mean, he's just a great Midwest dude. And he's out the other day, struck out 5 of 6 loons, and he was throwing 95, 96, and his legs are like, I mean, he's just massive. There's so many times that I think, like if somebody stood, like when Blake Snell was here, I've done this a little while. Yeah. Usually they're a lot younger when they come through here. But to stand next to him, I was like, oh, my gosh. I mean, they're just huge. But, you know, Madison Bumgarner, they're just huge human beings. Yeah. But you see him as a pitcher, and so it might not be the strength and conditioning stuff.
It's not when you think of a little skinny guy.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not, and he's not. He's solid and wide.
The strength and conditioning has changed the nutrition. Last year for a night game like this, Padres were doing a 1 o'clock meal, catered for every guy, 5 o'clock meal catered for every guy, and post game catered for every guy. True story. When we were helping run the Wizards, I would go up into the main stand behind home. Whatever was left under the heat lamp, I took it down and set it on the counter. And sometimes I would get mauled like a football scrum on a fumble. And it was for Italian sausage that had sat under the lamp for 90 minutes.
They got hour-old hot dogs.
Snell came in here and he bought, you know, Ruth's Chris for the boys, you know. And so that has changed. And you know what? Not to go on a tangent here, but there's a lot of opinions now about all the Tommy John stuff.
Right.
And I saw Josiah Gray and maybe two or three other guys today went on. They weren't saying Tommy John, but flexor tendons and forearms and stuff, and there's a lot of working out now.
Yeah, Dr. Andrews announced his retirement, and he's one of the more famous for conducting those surgeries. All right, final question for you, Mike. Tonight, what are we looking at for a crowd? Tickets are available at the door. What kind of tickets can fans still get in the lower bowl?
Yeah, so we've sold about 3,800 tickets. Last year on opening day, you and I were talking before I came on, before you had some other interviews. It was very similar to this.
Yeah.
I mean, it was very nice. We all growled about the snow flurries and rain and some of that. And last year we did right around 4,200. I would think we would be there or beat that by a little bit. People are excited. And they can walk up tonight. No ticket price changes from last year to this year. And so there's a lot to be excited about. $2 concessions tonight. So come on out.
I do think the odds are like plus 240. We will have snow at some point in April. But, Mike, I don't want to ruin the joy you have tonight.
Thank you.
Yeah, so Mike Nutter joining us. Appreciate it, Mike.
Thanks so much.
Good luck tonight and good luck with the season.
Thank you.
That is TimCast President Mike Nutter. And, of course, we mentioned this last time. If you want to get a summer job or maybe you've got a kid that's coming back from college and then, you know, next month or so, there'll be plenty of time to still get a little bit of summer fun in here at the ballpark. You get a job. I mean, what other job can you have where you spend it with half the community, you get to see your friends, and as long as you're doing your work, it works out really well for both of you.
But they could pay me in popcorn, I'll tell you that.
Well, that's what we pay you. So
yeah, true that.
Pretty much works out.
New job opportunity here.
We've got a whole nother hour. We're going to be counting down to 6 o'clock. And then a reminder, Tin Caps Baseball, the special 30-minute pregame edition will be starting at 6 o'clock right here. And that's all coming up. This is the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.